Hello, and welcome to the Open Systems Media eCast, The Low-Risk Path to Building Autonomous Car Architectures. I'm Kurt Schwader, your moderator, with today's speakers, Thomas Bloor from QNX and Bob Lee from RTI. Thomas Bloor is an automotive business development manager at BlackBerry's QNX Software Systems, where he's responsible for building, developing, and maintaining relationships with automotive Tier 1 suppliers and OEMs. Prior to joining QNX, Thomas spent 16 years at Intel, most recently as an automotive business development director, where he worked with Fiat, Chrysler, Ford, General Motors, Jaguar, and other OEMs on their hardware and software strategies. Thomas holds a Bachelor's of Engineering degree with honors from Birmingham University. Bob Lee brings over 15 years of experience developing new markets and building technology companies to his role at Director of Market Development RTI. Bob graduated from Queen's University with a degree in mathematics and engineering and has used his education in control and communication systems to engineer embedded solutions for a variety of industries, including energy, manufacturing, and transportation. At each venture, he's led the charge to create new technologies for emerging markets and disruptive applications. For some housekeeping, today's schedule consists of about 50 minutes of presentation, leaving 10 minutes at the end of the hour for audience Q&A. Before we begin, I want to run down some important features of your viewing console. First, your viewing console consists of a set of windows that you can close, open, move, resize, and maximize to your personal preference. On entry, you'll see a picture of our presenters in the presenter window, a biography and speaker bio window, a presentation slide with the slides window, and a Q&A view that enables you to ask questions during the event. Now, there are seven icons at the bottom of your screen, and clicking on the icon at the far left will reset your viewing area to the default configuration. The rest of the icons will open or close the corresponding windows. You can hover your mouse over each window to show what it does. The handout icon, I will point out, that's third from the right. It has a presenter's slides in PDF format so you can follow along. The Q&A window enables you to participate in today's event. You can simply type your question into the Ask a Question text box and then hit Submit. We encourage you to ask questions throughout the event while the question is still fresh in your mind. We'll address as many of these as we can during the closing Q&A, and if you have a question pertaining to the eCast operation itself, you can submit those too, and one of our technicians will be happy to respond to you. This and all Open Systems Media eCasts are copyrighted and may not be recorded or used in any way without the express written consent of Open Systems Media. Thomas will be kicking things off for us today. Thomas, the floor is yours.
Thanks very much. Hi, as Kurt said, I'm Thomas Bloor, Head of Business Development for QNX Software Systems and the BlackBerry Technology Solutions Group. Today we'll talk a little bit about low-risk architectures for autonomous cars. It's a very exciting area at the moment with rapidly evolving technology, a variety of automakers from startups in Silicon Valley to established OEMs in Detroit working on the problems. This mix is giving a variety of architectures and approaches as we move forwards. But first, a little bit about who we are. QNX was founded in 1980 as a microkernel operating system. As well as success in embedded and industrial markets, they grew rapidly in automotive and were subsequently acquired by Harman and eventually joined BlackBerry in 2010. QNX specializes in safe, secure, and reliable mission-critical software currently used in over 60 million cars, the number one software system in advanced vehicle infotainment systems, as well as the number one software in telematics today. As well as robust operating systems, QNX Acoustics Solutions has shipped in over 50 million hands-free systems to date. As well as QNX, today you hear a little bit about our sister division, Certicom. Certicom was founded in 1985 and joined BlackBerry in 2009. Certicom is a global leader in elliptic curve cryptography, used to provide public-private key encryption and keying for secure communications and authentication in automotive, manufacturing, and advanced systems worldwide. Certicom solutions are at the forefront of the technology and trusted by the NSA and hundreds of companies worldwide. So, to start from first principles, to build an autonomous car, you need to start with an understanding of the world around you. This starts, in turn, with maps and GPS location data. Now, autonomous driving needs maps with more data than just this satellite view. Detailed lane information as well as 3D data and frequent updates required in order to get to the level of detail required. This is combined with multiple sensor arrays around the car to provide data for localization. Localization in the context of autonomous driving means the overlay of objects in the real world around the vehicle and the fusing of this data with the mapping in order to get a precise location of the vehicle, plus a world view of other cars, pedestrians, and objects such as traffic cones around the car. LiDAR data from the car is compared with the 3D map data to get a precise location down to several inches. So if we take a visualization of the mapping generated by an autonomous vehicle, we would see something like this. Lane data with traffic flow direction is merged with LiDAR and other sensor data to give a highly detailed model of the surroundings needed to get in order to start plotting a path towards our destination. So how do we architect the systems that will generate this for us and plan our route forwards? The answer is a sensor fusion architecture. In this high-level view, we'll look at the functional building blocks that make up the system. At the left are our sensors. Cameras, LiDAR, and ultrasonic sensors give differing resolutions at different distances from the vehicle. These sensors all communicate over multiple physical interfaces and protocols. For example, cameras may communicate over Ethernet, GPS data comes across USB, and later LiDAR can come across a processor's GPIO, or General Purpose Input-Output ports. All the sensors feed into the Sensor Fusion ECU, which takes the raw data input and combines it with mapping and object detection to generate a detailed world view that we've just looked at. Now today there are multiple different architectures being proposed for the Sensor Fusion function. Different silicon companies are selling to their strength. For example, a company with a strong expertise in graphics may have a strong bias towards camera-based systems, while other companies proposing approaches geared around multi-core processing offerings or programmable logic vendors are promoting their FPGA offerings. The next box, the automated drive controller, takes the results generated and plots the path forward based on the destination and algorithms it has for decision-making and safety. Based on the results of this, it communicates to the vehicle actuators and controls the steering, transmission, and brakes. These control modules have a lot of intensive computing to do, and in fact, one of the challenges is able to get enough computing power into a single node in the automotive environment. The system also needs communications with the cloud, not shown on this diagram, as it is expected that these advanced systems will provide for learning and data streaming to the cloud in order to improve and refine the control algorithms based on the deployed fleet over time. Now, this gives a very simplified view of the potential architecture, but there are plenty of challenges. So let's talk about some of the challenges. The architecture we just described is an example of consolidated domain controllers. In vehicles today, most systems provide separate discrete functionality in the vehicle. A radar for adaptive cruise control, for example, does not share its data with other systems in the car. This has led to a proliferation of electronic control units, or ECUs, in the vehicle. As the level of sophisticated electronic grows in the car and the complexity of the cost of these systems is growing at a pace that is not necessarily sustainable. This has led to the movement to consolidate multiple control units into fewer, larger consolidated controllers. ECU consolidation delivers many benefits to manufacturers and tier ones. Lower costs and simplification for designers, engineers, procurement, production departments. Consolidated controllers means reduced wearing, lower weight, improved fuel economy, and lower cost of secondary components. It enables a unified software platform, simplifying software builds with consistent architectures and shared frameworks for logging, debugging, and performance monitoring. And finally, consolidated controllers allow easier data sharing. The downside of this is that the designer of the autonomous car has the challenge to build highly capable hardware that will provide huge computing power at low power consumption levels within the automotive environment. So if we go back to our architecture, we can start looking at some of the building blocks needed to enable these systems. Now, this is still a simplified viewpoint. For example, the Ethernet bus we see connecting the fusion and drive controller functions on the left might have camera data from the sensor cameras. And with the rise of automotive Ethernet, the vehicle actuators on the right may be talking on the same bus. Now, as you can see in this architecture, QNX can provide the ISO 26262 safety certified operating system that can underpin both the fusion and automated drive controller units. This is important, as we discussed, in relation to consolidation of electronics Having a common software framework and operating system has benefits in enabling more flexible software environment and flexible architecture as we transition from generation to generation. This is important as the architecture will evolve and change as the technology matures across different approaches and generations of vehicle, and a unified operating system environment enables easier porting of functions as architectures evolve. So how might these architectures evolve over time? There will be a shifting distribution of functionality across the system. This will depend on a number of factors, evolution of the technologies, and competition between different suppliers. Firstly, at the sensor level, there will be a great drive for lower costs, which will define the eventual number and types of sensors deployed in the car. This will be driven by the manufacturing economies of the individual sensor types. As autonomous drive systems are still an immature technology, automakers today want to pull all the raw data from the sensors into the sensor fusion module. Over time, this may not be the most cost-effective way of building a system, and potentially some of the data processing might migrate into smart sensors. This movement will be encouraged as sensor manufacturers try to provide more value in their systems and pull processing into the sensors in order to defend their revenues and margins. Additionally, the connections from these smart sensors and net will evolve away from hardwired GPIO or other connections into the sensor fusion module to make more use of standardized interfaces such as Ethernet. Additionally, the amount of sensor data provided to the sensor fusion module may place too high a demand on the processing capability of this node, leading a distribution of this function into smaller blocks with lower processing and therefore thermal demands. For example, a neural network doing object detection might be implemented in a separate graphics processor or FPGA. The neural network software itself is going to evolve. This is a technology that evolved rapidly over the last 3 years, and there are competing architectures potentially implementing these neural networks. For instance, a GPU in a processor, as I mentioned, or programmed into an FPGA. Given the pace of the evolution of this technology, I can say with a fairly high degree of confidence that the systems we're building in 2020 and beyond will have evolved considerably from what we're architecting today. Lastly, the functionality provided by the cloud will evolve. Machine learning is another evolving technology, and this will be distributed across the cloud and the car. The balance of machine learning implemented in the vehicle versus deep learning in the cloud will evolve as the balance of cost, connectivity, and processing capability shifts over generations of vehicle architecture and network architectures. Distribution of this processing to the cloud will reduce the complexity and requirements of these systems in the vehicle, enabling lower cost functionality and more rapid evolution of features. Additionally, some non-real-time functions may be also implemented in the cloud, such as natural language voice processing is starting to migrate today. As the technology evolves and the autonomous fleet expands, this could develop into advanced cooperative driving functionality and potentially even route scheduling functions. Given the rapid evolution of these systems and architectures, in order to build a low-risk autonomous drive architecture, therefore, we would need a modular design flexibility in order to adapt to shifting requirements and the feasibility of design implementations. Obviously, code portability is a key feature of enabling this. Reduction development costs and increasing reuse, a code once and reuse many times methodology, will benefit and be a competitive advantage to automakers that adopt this approach. A common operating system framework enables the code portability, plus an operating system such as QNX compatible to the POSIX coding standard enables code from advanced research, often done on the Linux base, to be easily moved and recompiled into these new architectures. Lastly, and Bob will talk more about this in a minute, a flexible, predictable communications bus is essential in order to enable the modular design flexibility of the entire system, as functions in software can be ported and migrated between functional nodes in different implementations of the architecture. So we've looked at the high-level architecture. Now let's look at some of the implementation challenges and possible solutions. Firstly, functions compiled into a single consolidated controller may have different safety requirements. This is a challenge as the additional work to build and certify a system rated to ASIL D is considerably greater than building an ASIL B or A or B system. In order to effectively implement these mixed integrity systems, you require full separation, isolation, and security when the different adjacent functions and OSs are integrated into a single consolidated controller. This drives the requirement for a safe and secure hypervisor solution in order to provide the ability to support up to ASIL-D functions in a mixed safety requirement environment. The ideal solution would be a robust Type 1 hypervisor solution in order to enable you to build these mixed systems with full separation, isolation, and security between partitions. This enables reuse with the modular software approach that we've just highlighted. With cars becoming connected inside and out, security must become very robust. This needs to be designed in from the start. It cannot just be bolted on after the fact. To provide security for the autonomous car, multiple solutions are needed to provide a truly secure solution to the market. These solutions need to span trust anchors, a root of trust, a functionality that's provided by Certicom, backs up everything to trusted and known secure certificate, securing electronic control units and domain controllers. A secure operating system, such as QNX's, needs layers of built-in security features and mandatory access control implementations to secure the software and the systems. Managed PKI injects secure keys and certificates into which enables companies to manage, renew, and revoke security certificates for nodes in the car, preventing counterfeit parts and compromise by hackers. Distribution and use of these certificates in the global automotive supply chain is the basis of your secure asset management system, which secures the supply chain from manufacture to installation. Solutions to these problems can be provided by QNX. Now, the core of QNX is our microkernel operating system. This provides a robust system that is safe, ISO 26262 certified to support full ASIL-D functions. Secure. The operating system provides layered security, providing secure boot, authorization policies, application sanctioning, secure communications, and tamper resistance, amongst other features. Our sister division, Certicom, provides PKI and certificate management solutions to enable root of trust in embedded systems and security along the global supply chain. Reliability comes from the microkernel architecture, which is inherently reliable, running functions, even drivers, as user space, which can be restarted independently of the rest of the system. Also, our system is adaptable. Our hypervisor solution is a true Type 1 hypervisor, which enables the system to host other operating systems, such as AutoSAR, which will be required in the autonomous car. And lastly, dependable. QNX Engineering Services has an enviable 100% record of meeting deliverables and startup production dates into Tier 1 and OEM programs. Exploring QNX's solutions a little more, the QNX Software Development Platform 7.0 is the next generation of our operating system and continues to provide customers with the same mission-critical reliability that they've depended on over the last 35 years. The alpha is available today and features 64-bit and 32-bit core operating system support on ARM and Intel architectures. This will provide the basis of our next-generation safety-certified operating systems and tools. Additionally, we reduce risk by conforming to POSIX standards, which makes it easy for developers to port applications from other operating systems to QNX, such as porting Linux applications developed in research programs. If developers know how to program in Linux, then they know how to program in QNX. With the release of 7.0 becomes a new and improved set of tools called Momentix Tool Suite. This integrated development environment has improved usability and scalability, and it's based on Eclipse, which allows developers to easily develop, debug, analyze, and optimize their code from a familiar development environment. Now, I've mentioned our safety certification. QNX was the first real-time operating system certified for use in ISO 26262 ASIL-D systems. Our scope of certification includes the QNX kernel with multi-core and adaptive partitioning, the toolchain, and C library. Certified by TÜV Rheinland, you can see our certificate here and find this on the web. It's not hidden. We're very proud of this certificate, knowing the work that went into getting it. This pre-certification of the operating systems reduces cost and risk in gaining overall certification for your autonomous drive systems and functions. Our certified operating system is the same code base as our standard offerings. so you can develop knowing there's no code changes required in the operating system to achieve overall certification, lowering risk through the development. Lastly, if someone claims to have an certified operating system, ask to see their certificate. The certified operating system is the basis for the QNX hypervisor, which is a true type 1 which maintains real-time performance and determinism in a system. Building safety-certified products, which include mixed safety environments, multiple operating systems, and a hypervisor requires real-time performance. This is the ability to maintain determinism in a real-time guest even when running on a virtualized platform. This requires a scheduler that supports real-time applications. Spatial isolation of memory, CPU cores, and hardware devices is also required. Temporal isolation with a guaranteed processor budget is enabled with QNX's proprietary adaptive partitioning scheduling technology. Overall, QNX reduces risk by bringing the technology and tools needed for building devices with mixed safety environments and operating systems, consolidating discrete processors into the same hardware system on chip. Lastly, QNX has released the first version of the QNX platform for ADAS, which enables faster, lower cost system certification and speeds time to market for vision systems. The platform for ADAS can be used in conjunction with either non-certified or certified versions of the operating system. The platform feature set was built to support the following types of systems. Camera-based informational systems. These are systems that consolidate ADAS functions such as lane departure warning, pedestrian detection, forward collision warning, and traffic sign detection, all running on high-performance processors with purpose-built vision accelerators. Another example is surround view systems for park assist. An example of systems that would be built on certified operating systems would be camera-based active safety systems. These are capable of sensing their surroundings and take active control of the vehicle as a safety measure. As a result, safety certification is typically required. Examples include automatic emergency braking and lane keeping assist. Lastly, automated driving systems require sensor fusion systems and automated drive domain controllers to act as the brains of the system. In summary, we took a brief look at building low-risk autonomous drive architectures. In order to achieve this, you need to design for flexibility and portability, build a secure code base around a common operating system framework. QNX can provide solutions for all these requirements. But lastly, you also need a flexible, predictable communications bus. All these features enable easier migration as architectures evolve between generations, enabling change without the need to build from the ground up with every architectural shift. Reuse of existing code is the biggest factor in lowering risk as you design these systems. Thank you, and I will hand over to Bob, who will now explain the importance of data-centric bus architectures to achieving these design goals.
Great. Thank you, Thomas. So my name is Bob Lee. I'm the Director of Market Development at RTI. My focus this year has been on autonomous cars and transportation markets, and I'd love to share with you our insights from many years of experience building mission-critical and safety-critical architectures. First of all, we're about the data, and data requires connectivity. There's no way to build a large distributed system with connectivity. These new types of systems need new technology, and it has to be the right data, get to the right place, and on time. It has to be flexible, reliable, and fast. And this is more than an automotive story, although we'll focus on automotive for this session. It's about many industries converging in their requirements for security, reliability, safety, and interoperability. But this does affect automotive in that the automotive industry is going to need to connect to other industries and other systems as this technology evolves. This is what RTI does, and it's a very exciting future that we're excited to be part of. So a bit about RTI. RTI is a software company. We have worked with over 1,000 different projects and mission and safety critical applications across many different industries, including transportation. Our software supports products that are worth over $1 trillion in product and project value. We are involved in over 15 standard and consortia efforts, working with industries to support interoperability and multi-vendor ecosystems. Real systems have a way of clarifying theory. So when we build architectures and build systems, there's no greater test than deploying these into demanding environments. And RCI has a decade of experience doing this. So how do we help autonomy? Well, RCI builds a toolkit or a framework for the DDS set of standards, which stands for a data distribution service. In our opinion, and the opinion of many large multinational organizations, this is a very important standard for many industrial IoT systems, including and especially autonomous and connected cars. DDS is a communication middleware that allows you as an architect or developer to build your applications more efficiently with less code in a way that makes them more reliable, more resilient, and supportable for many years or decades. It isn't just a protocol, but a way of thinking about and architecting your system where you focus on the part of the communication that has value, the data. So the value in all of this, and the IoT in general, is that it allows interoperability between devices, between domains, between industries. The unlocking of this data provides new and very real value. This is especially true for autonomous systems, where when we talk about autonomous drive and ADAS and sensor fusion, we're talking about access to data. So the timely access to the right data, which allows algorithms to make good decisions, is critical for any architecture. So let's look at the data within an autonomous system. Well, we have many different data sources: cameras, LiDAR, radar, GPS, error messages, command and control. This data has a variety of types, from video streams, which is high volume and potentially high frequency, to LiDAR data, to radar data, down to error messages, which are infrequent and very low bandwidth requirements. How do we mix all of these data types within one system, especially if we want to be consistent in how we use and access that data? So it's not all the same. It's not all the same performance requirements. It's not all the same technical requirements from the network. In addition, we need to consider scalability, safety, and security when designing any architecture. What works for a few nodes or a few developers may not scale to thousands of nodes and hundreds of developers. So let's consider these three key points: scale, safety, and security. So what's the impact of using DDS on autonomy? Well, there's a number of features in DDS that support quality of service parameters that are critical for an autonomous system. It's been proven in many mission and safety critical applications to ensure reliability, guarantee response times, manage complex data flow, ease system integration across multiple developers and multiple teams and numerous applications. With DDS, you can build security into your system from the start. We can make our development deployments flexible, supporting multiple OS versions, multiple hardware targets, and multiple language and operating systems. We can ease safety certification with certified middleware, and all of this comes within one set of standards that's supported by many different vendors. You may not have heard of DDS before. So what makes the DDS data bus different? Well, let's look at some of the existing protocols. Point-to-point and client-server, most people are familiar with, supporting the Internet and many network architectures. Publish-subscribe is very common in industrial and embedded applications. And queuing is used extensively in cloud and web services applications. But there's something wrong with all of these. They're all about messages. The data is really an afterthought. The application needs to understand the message, be able to unpack and pack the data, serialize it, deserialize it, and there's a lot of work you have to do to be able to access data from other applications. Data-centric is different. With a data-centric application, data becomes the main method of communication. Applications access data in their native format. The infrastructure manages packaging that and sharing it over the data bus. All applications access this shared data model where we're accessing data where everybody agrees and understands how to access the data and what it means. And in addition, DDS does not have any servers or brokers, so there's no single point of failure. And when it comes to scalability, much greater performance than systems like a client server that require numerous servers for every X number of clients. So it's a good idea or helps to our understanding if we compare a data bus to a database. A database is about historic data or old data, data that's been recorded previously. A data bus is about future data or real-time data, data that we need to act on within a certain time period. A data bus has structure. We have tables. We have rows. A data bus also has structure, but that structure takes the form of topics and records, but very similar to a database. A database understands the data. It controls access to the data, and it has a standard interface that just about every application can understand and use. Similar for a data bus, where a data bus has a standard interface based on the DDS set of standards, it also is the way that applications interface with data and therefore with each other. So instead of applications sending messages back and forth, they access the data bus and they use data as the source of truth. This is very powerful when it comes to development because we have a single source of truth across our application, we have a standard way of interfacing with data, and we have structure and rules with how we interact with that data. It helps scalability, it helps performance, and it helps us to integrate our multiple applications and teams together. DDS is a standard that is managed by the OMG, the Object Management Group, which also manages many other standards, some like UML, which you're probably familiar with. There are many vendors supporting the standard. Over a dozen different vendors support DDS. It's built on decades of deployment experience, so it is battle-tested. And these are in some of the most demanding environments out there, in aerospace, transportation, defense industry, energy, and medical. All of these vendors are interoperate that conform to the DDS standard and specification, and it's not just at the API level, but it's also at the wire level. And DDS addresses much more than just interoperability. It addresses compatibility from the data model on down. We also have a standard called X-Types, which supports interoperability between versions of a data model, so your system can evolve over time. So why use this data bus? Well, reduce risk. It's a proven, reliable, and very powerful and 100% standards-based technology. There's an elegant architecture to a data bus that eliminates coupling and speeds development. With quality of service, you can control and simplify integration between teams. We do this by moving things like performance and reliability and timeliness of data from the application code into the infrastructure. So your application developers can simply develop the algorithms and solutions that they need, and the infrastructure, the data bus, determines is used to configure and ensure performance of that data. We can also use advanced capability of RTI's Connect DDS implementation, supporting multiple transports, multiple OSs, language transparency, supports reliability, scalability across networks, and practical security. All of this is very relevant to the automotive industry as we see more higher performance processors deployed to the cars, Ethernet becoming the standard for communication between systems, and the need for these mobile devices, these cars, or robots on wheels, as we've come to call them, connecting to other infrastructure, connecting to back-end solutions, connecting to the cloud. So where is DDS used? Well, DDS can be used to integrate all of the components in autonomous architecture. This is a simplified architecture that's developed with one of our customers using DDS to connect situation awareness, cameras, data fusion, planning, vehicle control, localization, as well as connecting to the existing vehicle platform, either over CAN bus or AUTOSAR. Can connect to visualization and navigation, doing protocol translation to connect to existing legacy protocols. We have a solution called the routing service, which connect different domains together, bridging one domain that may have a safety critical implementation to a back end domain such as cloud services. And this allows for interoperability across the entire network of the transportation network, without requiring protocol translation or complex routing design. There's The idea of quality surface built into DDS, built into the standard, there are a number of tunable quality of service parameters that are part of the standard that are used to ensure timely delivery, the right data at the right time, to ensure priority is given to a mission critical or a critical data. It supports extensive network designs, application code, and thorough testing of the system level. DDS simplifies all of this by putting it in the infrastructure. It's one of the key advantages of using DDS over other traditional protocols. Quality of service is the abstract way to pass instructions to the messaging layer. If we discover special requirements in the pathfinding algorithm, for example, we might express those as new policies and solicit new messages to support them. For instance, we can envision a policy defining behavioral characteristics, perhaps the worst case response time of a forward-looking sensor, and our quality of service policies will ensure that we're monitoring for response from this center and notify applications if any information is missing. So the DDS standard also lends itself to extension and specialization if we find it necessary. This allows for IP development within individual applications without having to manage the entire system, and also fosters innovation through future-proofing IP. The idea of decoupling and isolation of application is core to a data-centric data bus. So then we take this to a massive scale. When we think of industrial IoT and we think of cars as part of the transportation network, we have communication at the machine level between devices and interfaces, but we also need to connect those systems at the subnet level or at the local level, where we need to pull out certain information, maybe about traffic or alarms or status information, to be able to make better decisions. But we may also need information on a citywide basis or a system of systems where we need to control allocation of resources. Or we may need data at a higher level where we're looking at long-term trends or connecting to cloud applications. This is a layered data bus architecture that DDS also supports, isolating different domains, allowing data to cross from one domain to the other through things like the routing service, and supporting different quality of service and performance parameters at each level, but still having a unified data model that allows data sharing across all of these levels. This is a very powerful architecture for the next generation of transportation systems and automotive vehicles. So we think DDS is very powerful for this scale. DDS is currently used in the largest SCADA system in the world, so it's proven to work in these very large systems. And this idea of scale applies to embedded networks, which have multiple layered domains, all the way up to cloud and network architectures. But you must ask, what about security? When we look at that architecture, we have to question, how do we secure all of this, especially with some of the recent attacks in the news? Well, we need a new type of security for industrial IoT. We're all familiar with system and transport security, where we may put a firewall around a network or secure communication at the transport level. But we also need unit security, where we're securing the operating system and we're securing the applications on the device. And then we also need data security. And this is something new that DDS can provide: data flow security with secure topics, and we can secure information at a very granular level, determining who has access, what their permissions are, and preventing intruders from accessing the data, even if they are on the network. And this is very important for a connected car, or industrial IoT, or even in-car solutions, because we know malicious actors will get access to the network. A firewall isn't enough. They have access to the hardware. They have access to the network in public environments. So we need to be sure we can protect data, we can protect devices, we can protect applications within those networks. So we support the DDS secure standard developed by the OMG. It is a security standard, so it is interoperable with other solutions that support DDS secure. It requires no change to existing DDS applications that are already written because it is controlled by configuration. So the APIs for DDS secure are the same as the APIs for every other DDS interface. It also supports plug-in architecture, where you can substitute your own authentication, access control, encryption, data tagging, or logging. So this is great when working with QNX in that we can support their Certicom encryption solution instead of off-the-shelf solutions and customize for applications that need that type of encryption and that type of security. It also runs over any transport, so your security is abstract and agnostic to the transport that you're using. And it's completely decentralized. There's no server or broker that's required for DDS Secure to communicate between applications. And then finally, the next important aspect is safety-critical software. So one of the tenets of safety-critical software is reducing code size. We also need to consider testability and design the code to be deterministic. This is all driven by ensuring reliable functionality, but also cost. Software certification is not cheap, and you have to have special attention paid to the development process when writing the code and developing the software. Certification cost is also linearly proportional to the number of lines of code. So there's a direct relationship to fewer lines of code to lower cost of development and lower maintenance costs over the long term. So when designing certifiable software, keep in mind that every line must be tested, every component must be either well-documented or self-explaining, and we must make state of each component controllable to a level needed by testing. We have to make immediate and final results observable by logging, and we must design components such that they can be tested in isolation. This is a very challenging requirement to impose on any development environment. Automotive is used to developing safety-critical software, but you combine that requirement with the advanced requirements of autonomous drive and the complexity of that software, our challenge is now magnified by a number more than tenfold. So how does DDS help with safety certification? Well, the first thing we can help with is reduced application code. You can see a comparison here of method-centric versus data-centric communication architectures. In a method-centric world, you have a lot of code for message parsing, filtering, caching, addressing that message. Often you have to manage performance within the application. All of that is code that is not reused, or it is hard to develop code that can be reused within that application. If you move that to the infrastructure, using a data-centric model, all of that parsing and filtering and management is now reused as part of the infrastructure, and we only have to test and certify it once. There's a huge savings in this approach. Another big advantage of data-centric and certified middleware is the isolation that we provide between components. When you're developing for ANSA level D for some components, any component that communicates with that application has to be certified to the same level if there's a direct requirement or relationship between those components. So you need to isolate your system. You need to isolate your application so you don't have to certify your display, for example, your navigation display to the highest certification level just because it's communicating with the path planning, which may require a higher level certification. So for isolation, you need certification of your operating system and your hardware, which is something that QNX can support with their certified OS, but you also need certification of your communication middleware. And this is where RTI comes in with our certified connected DDS product, our connected DDS cert product, which is certified currently to DO-178C, which is a highest level aerospace certification and used actively in the field. And we'll have healthcare and ISO 26262 certifications, ANSA level D, in the near future. So we get this isolation, but we also get a certified environment that controls quality of service, which helps ensure performance of the system, ensures that we have reliability of the system. Building that into our certified middleware can greatly ease our application development. So if we get back to the DDS standard, the full DDS specification includes a number of different standards that support a highly portable platform, OS, and language agnostic communication framework. So we can connect multiple systems together. The spec is supported by many vendors and has been battle-proven in a number of demanding industries. And relative to this presentation, it's also worked very well with QNX. With these two systems together, you have a fully integrated, standards-based, safety-certified software stack for demanding real-time embedded applications. And so as we're building the future with autonomous drive and industrial IoT, we must build the right future with the right architectures and choose architectures that can support demanding requirements that evolve into this hype-connected and data-centric world. RTI is very excited to be part of that, and look forward to your questions and comments. Back over to you, Kurt.
Great. Thanks, Bob. Thomas, we are now to the Q&A. Got some good questions coming in and want you to continue to ask those questions as we get through the Q&A. Let's start with Thomas. Question about ECUs. Will the ECUs for autonomous driving be OEM-specific or off-the-shelf available for anyone wanting to build an autonomous car? Where do you think we're headed with ECUs?
I think the industry and the market is going to end up in, if you like, a couple of layers, right? I think clearly the larger automakers with global footprints and higher volumes of cars will have the resources and the ability to basically architect their own systems. Whether they physically build them is a different matter, but certainly they'll architect those, and those will be more proprietary for those individual OEMs. I think, below that, there will be, obviously there's a very mature, tier one industry, and a lot of those tier ones are, hugely capable and are also looking at developing autonomous drive systems. So, the big OEMs, right, they're going to, architect and design their own that won't be available to the open market. There will be the tier ones will bring, solutions to market that will be available for everyone to buy.
Okay, great. Let's see. Bob, the car environment has a lot of different buses involved, as Thomas explained. Question about what's typically used at layer one and layer two of the ISO model for DDS, or does it matter?
So DDS is transport agnostic. The best way we fit into the ISO model is layers four, five, and up to the application layer, but it's not a direct mapping because many applications are built a little differently. But when you look at the lower layers, we're used on, as I said, there's 12 different transports used. UDP is very common. We're really designed for a one-to-many. There's a lot of efficiency gained in terms of latency and bandwidth uses on the network when you're talking about Ethernet, and we use UDP. DDS has its own quality of service built in, and it can guarantee reliability based on the UDP protocol. So it works very well with UDP, but it's definitely not the only one. It also runs over serial, over TCP/IP, and over others. I think in the automotive context, if we're moving to Ethernet-based communications within the automotive as the dominant communication standard, then we'll see a lot of UDP and some TCP/IP.
Okay, great. I think this is a question for both of us. Let's start with Thomas here and then move into Bob here. It's clear that QNX is an RTOS. Where does the implementation of DDS from RTI fit in? Does it need to integrate with QNX in some way? Thomas, maybe you can talk about how those two things interrelate, and I think, Bob, you mentioned one way with the encrypted services of QNX, but Thomas, can you elaborate on how they fit together?
Yeah, so RTI's implementation of DDS would be it's the communications layer, right? So yes, that would be integrated with the operating system. A number of the pieces that Bob have spoken about would be implemented in each of those computing nodes throughout the car. So there would be a level of integration with the QNX operating system.
Okay, so I guess there would be a layer one, two specific driver underneath, built for QNX, then the APIs, DDS just uses that to implement the data bus.
Yeah, I can take over from there if
sure.
That works. Yeah, so the operating system will typically have an IP stack, and DDS is supplied as libraries that really get built into your application. So we support multiple QNX OS versions, and they're available. And then as a integrator or developer, you use those libraries within the QNX environment. We use the existing, network stack as the for our transport layer, and then you build the libraries with your application. So there's great because QNX is POSIX compliant, and because DDS is an open standard, there's really very few roadblocks to making these systems work together, and we have lots of common customers and deployments in the field.
Okay, sounds good. Thomas, how does a car react when a new road is not part of the mapping? You mentioned at the beginning about the ECUs that can control the sensors and interpret the results and provide the autonomy. What about new unmapped areas, or even there's a related question involving what happens when a sensor goes bad? Are there safeguards?
Yeah, so there's a couple of things there, and so this is really, exploring kind of the how does the system react to unforeseen circumstances, and a lot of this is going to depend on how the manufacturers build these systems and what they want to happen. So at a very simple level, say you have a new subdivision being built, right? It typically doesn't get into the map databases for several years. An autonomous car going into that environment could do a number of things, right? So it could very simply surrender control back to a human driver because it doesn't have the mapping and doesn't understand where it's going. In that scenario, the car would then start data collecting and start, basically collaborating by pulling that data off the sensors and streaming it up to the cloud. Again, as Bob said, we could use DDS to enable that data to be streamed up to the cloud to, refine the maps in the cloud and add those streets as they go. There is a possibility for the more advanced type autonomous vehicles that don't have, steering. There's a couple of options there. They potentially could, explore their way forward using more of the vision-based systems to detect, the edges of the road and the, logic on the board to work their way forwards through that division. The last option, which may not be the most popular, would be simply for the fully autonomous car with no kind of human control possible to basically stop and say, sorry, I can't take you any further. So I think in reality, right, they will either surrender control to a human driver or they will edge forward using the systems that they have, sort of vision-based systems to detect the edges of the road and the LiDAR mapping, all while streaming that map data up to the database in the cloud to refine the maps for other users.
I see. Okay. Bob, does DDS or Connext support authenticating producers and consumers of the data? So this yields more toward authenticating the ability to get access to this data, and how does it do it?
Yeah, so the short answer is yes, but just to clarify, I'm going to caveat on that. We don't do certificate management per se, but we use the certificates and public and private keys to encrypt information and authenticate information. So simply, and there's a lot of complexity to this architecture, there's three different modes that you could enable for certification. One is you just want to authenticate who is generating, who's producing that data. And so that's really critical in any security application. You want to sign the message to show that it's coming from the right person, but you don't need to encrypt it. You could authenticate and encrypt, and then you could also manage permissions either through access control to different topics and different data. So there's a whole host of ways you can use DDS Secure, but authentication is the basis for all of it.
Okay, great. Thomas, how is the ISO 26262 affected when you add the application software on top of the QNX certified operating system?
Good question. So, to be certified a function, if you think of a function, right? So it's application software on top of the operating system, which is on top of the hardware, and it's talking to the rest of the system in the vehicle. So it's getting data in from the sensors, and it's driving those actuators to, steer the car or, accelerate or brake. The ASIL certification relates to, the system functionality, not one piece of it. So, an automaker would be doing a final certification on the complete stack. So the value that having the certified operating system or a certified communications path within a system is that you reduce the overall risk because you know you have certification on that stack. We give you the kind of big data pack of, here's the evidence, the orders, the results that certified that system. And so with knowing that, knowing there's no code base changes in that underlying operating system, you can just concentrate on making sure that the application software on top meets the certification standards, which reduces the workload tremendously. The thought of, hey, I have an application that sits on top of this whole operating system, but I have to certify the entire operating system, that's an awful lot of work. Just concentrating on certifying the application software on top is much, much less.
Okay, great. Let's see here. Bob, does DDS compete with AUTOSAR, or is it complementary?
So that's a good question, and the short answer is it's complementary. We're really operating in the same domain as Adaptive AUTOSAR, which is a new standard under development. Really, DDS compared to existing AUTOSAR or AUTOSAR Classic is just about an interoperability issue and how is it going to work with those systems. So DDS is very similar functionality and design philosophies, I guess, with AUTOSAR Adaptive in abstracting systems, in allowing for high data throughput, and how allowing for mixed data, and now allowing for dynamic systems. But DDS is really not AUTOSAR and not a replacement with AUTOSAR. I think it's going to come down to the choices of the designer, whether that's the OEM or the Tier 1, whoever's controlling the whole system, and what they choose to use, what sort of path they choose to go forward with how you will mix DDS and AUTOSAR within the environment. There's definitely room for both of them. There's a lot of value in AUTOSAR in ensuring interoperability between vendors and devices out there. But DDS is a little different, and has a battle-tested, very proven safety-critical communication protocol that definitely has its space within automotive and transportation.
Okay, great. Thomas, there's a question that's related to an answer you had just previously. Do the autonomous vehicles exchange information in order to define strategy as a group and not only isolated vehicles reacting to events? I guess you talked about how you can send information and do kind of real-time learning in the cloud. What about vehicle to vehicle?
Yeah, this is definitely coming. Today we're seeing standards such as V2X, V2I, so vehicle to vehicle, vehicle to infrastructure, being enabled for precisely this type of activity, right? The thought process that a car, that's maybe driving down the highway, brakes very hard, but then basically sends a message to anyone behind it that can receive that to alert people of that sudden braking event, so they can start to kind of roll off the speed and react more intelligently as a group and not just sort of individually reacting to what they can see, is definitely a technology that's already there. As I sort of referenced in my presentation, as these things become more sophisticated, well, I think we'll see more standards around things like platoon driving on the highway. This is where a group of cars will drive extremely close to each other, much more so than would be safe with human drivers. But as a platoon, they get benefits from reduced fuel consumption and a higher throughput on the highway. And these are sort of things that autonomous vehicles can do collaboratively together to make your drive in them more pleasant, faster, and more efficient.
Okay, very good. Lots of great questions and answers there. Unfortunately, we have reached the end of our Q&A. I want to thank Bob and Thomas for sharing your insights on building autonomous car architectures. We at Open Systems Media and RTI want to thank you, the audience, for attending today and contributing those excellent questions remotely. This eCast will be posted online at the URL shown on your screen within 24 hours, and an audio-only podcast version will also be made available there. You can do a web search with the keywords embedded space e-cast and find all of Open Systems Media eCast available for download as MP3s. Open Systems Media eCasts are copyrighted and may not be recorded or used in any way without the express written consent of Open Systems Media. Thanks for attending, and have a great day.